Welcome to the second of a series of three shiurim on relating with your children, particular type of children that we're talking about, relating to are teenagers between the ages of 13 and 19 inclusive. Now, these three shiurim are just going to deal with some general guidelines, and I'm going to try to stick as much information in them as possible. Details are beyond the scope of the shiurim, and the reason for this is because there's a tremendous need for people to be aware that there is a tremendous need for people to make efforts and to go out of their way to try to relate to their teenagers. Because, as I said by the previous year, the halacha is that teenagers are neither adult nor child. They're someplace nishtahin nishtaher. Because anybody over 20 is considered responsible for their actions and punished, bidei shemayim and bidei adam, for any averus that they do. Somebody under 13, a cousin, is punished neither bidei adam or bidei shemayim for anything they do. Punt, a teenager between the ages of 13 and 19, is punished bidei adam like an adult, but he's not punished bidei shemayim, he's treated like a child. So it's a clear halacha that teenagers, punt between the ages of 13 and 19 inclusive, are half child, half adult. And sometimes we tend to treat them like adults and they throw us off because they act like adults and we respond in kind. But unfortunately, when we're responding to the adult mode of them, it's really the child mode that's taken over. And we have a problem. Sometimes we respond to the child mode in the teenager, and it's the adult mode that needs response at that particular time. And that creates a problem. You're not dealing with a child and you're not dealing with an adult. You're dealing with somebody who's Monday and Thursday one way and Tuesday and Wednesday another way. And that's if they are completely in any particular way in any particular day. The problem, and I don't want to be a sensationalist and I don't want to sound like an alarmist, but the problem is growing, and the problem I'm describing and I'm talking about is the problem of our own teenagers from families of Bnei Torah and Talmidei Chachamim that are being disillusioned with their families and with Yiddishkeit and are slowly on various different levels walking away from the chinuch that they were given throughout their lives. I am the director presently of an organization that deals with Kirav Rechoikim, except instead of Rechoikim from non-religious families, it's Rechoikim from frum families that are no longer frum. Some of them are halfway frum, some of them are frum wannabes. But they're all in need of Kirav. And in the last year and a half, I've dealt with over 200 young men from frum families that are no longer consider themselves either 100% frum or frum at all. And the number is not only proportionate to the growing population in Klal Yisrael, it's proportionate to the growing amount of temptations and yetzaharas and traps that there are for our children out there on the street. You can't walk down Coney Island Avenue from here to your yeshiva without passing a bus. And you can't look at a bus anymore nowadays. When I was a kid in high school, I said last time, Rosh Hashiva, I was in Chaim Berlin, and my 11th grade Rebbe had an admonition by Rav Hutner, the Rosh Hashiva then, that he should watch out, because when you send your child to the grocery store to pick up a Coke, he's going to encounter more tumah over there, he told the Rebbe, than your grandfather did in all his years in Europe. But at least you had to go to the grocery store in those days. Nowadays you don't have to go there, it comes to you. The Satan delivers. It's tumma to go. And wherever you are, if you live at home and you send your children to yeshiva, and whatever yeshiva you send your children to, it doesn't matter if it's Hasidish or Litvish or any type of yeshiva. There are people in that yeshiva, students that you don't want your children to associate with. And there are nisyonis that your children are going to encounter that you want them to be able to resist. and we designated the topic of this particular shiur to a particular detail of dealing with our teenagers, and that is instilling with them a sense of, within them, a sense of their own self-worth, their own self-esteem. Now, a lot of people talk about this, and a lot of people write about this, and I have no degree in psychology. I never went to college. I went straight through yeshiva. Whatever I'm going to tell you is just Das Ben Odom, one man's experience, and perhaps some of the things that I've seen may be able to help you, and as we go on, maybe we can learn from each other. There are many shiurim and lectures that you're going to hear on the relationship between gaiva and anava. And that has nothing to do with what we're going to talk about tonight. Gaiva and anava depends upon the way you perceive yourself now. How big a tzaddik I am, how big a rasha I am, how much credit do I get for my mitzvahs, and how much credit do I not get and I leave to Hashem and siyata d'shmaya. That's not what we're going to discuss today. Self-esteem and self-worth has nothing to do particularly with what you are now, but rather your idea of your own potential, of where you can be one day. And it's that decision, that determination, that perspective of what a child's potential is that's going to determine the path that they choose for the rest of their life. Because when a child is in high school and they decide they don't want to be a big Rosh Hashiva, or she doesn't want to be a big Rebbetzin, more often than not, 99% of the time, it's because they feel within themselves, well, hey, I'm not cut out for that role. I'm not cut out to be a big Rebbetzin like Sora Shnira. I'm not cut out to be a big Rosh Hashiva like Reb Aaron Kotler. I'm cut out to be only a Poshet Mensch. And the reason why they feel they're cut out to be that way is because they look inside themselves and something they see is messing up their perspective. And I say messing up their perspective because no matter who they are, if they say that they're not cut out to be on that level, then they're wrong. Not only they are wrong, but according to the Rambam, they are a According to the Rambam, if you feel that that's the limits of your potential, and the Rambam never resorts to name-calling in his Sefer, but this is what he says in Hilchas Tshuva, you're a golem. He says the Rambam, it's in Hilchas Tshuva if you'd like to look it up, it's in Perek Hei Halacha Beis. Everybody knows it, but you may not have noticed it. The Rambam says, don't believe this, that the Umos Ha'olam say, and Rav Golmei Yisrael, majority of the dummies among Klal Yisrael, that Hashem designates for you a predetermined level for your potential of how great a tzaddik or rasha you can be. He says, not so. Rather, everybody in the world has the potential to be as great a tzaddik as Moshe Rabbeinu, or to be a great as a Rosha as Yeravim ben Nevat. Now it's interesting that the Rambam decided that Yeravim ben Nevat was the biggest Rosha in history, and that's for another time. But in any case, the Rambam says clearly that everybody has the potential to be a tzaddik as big as Moshe Rabbeinu. And he says, if you don't believe this, you are a golem, because it means you believe in predeterminism. It's kfira. It means that you don't believe in bechira chofshis. Bechira means that you have the potential to be a tzaddik totally and completely. And if you think you're not cut out to be on this level of this tzaddik, then you're a kaifa. That's predeterminism. And the Rambam says that it's not so, but everybody in the world has the potential to be a tzaddik as big as Moshe Rabbeinu. And now I'd like to ask everybody over here, you can answer to yourselves, how many of us here feel that we have the potential, we are capable, it is within our hand to be as great a tzaddik as Moshe Rabbeinu is? And that's exactly why it's so important for us to understand our own self-worth and our own self-value. Because if we limit our potential, we limit our goals and our aspirations, and once we limit that, we are cutting ourselves off from what we really can be. The reason why people believe that they're incapable of being a tzaddik as great as Moshe Rabbeinu is because they look at themselves and they listen to the voice of the Yetzer Hara that's sitting on your shoulder whispering into your ear. It says to you, you as big a tzaddik as Moshe Rabbeinu, please, look what you did yesterday. Look at all these averis that you're involved in. Look at all the Lashon Hara that you speak. Look how much you enjoy it. Look where you're going. Look how much bittul Torah you committed. Look how many averis you did. Moshe Rabbeinu, you enjoy doing these averis. To be a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu and to shove yourself into that tzidkis mold is going to be an uphill battle for the rest of your life, which you will not be able to be soivel, you won't be able to tolerate. You're you! You'll be a poshut mensch, maybe a beinoni, maybe a good beinoni, give some tzedakah, but that's all you can be. In other words, the Yetzer Hara takes a look at all of the things that you did and it says, well, based upon this, that determines that your potential is less than being a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, these seem like convincing arguments, but they're not so. The Yetzer Hara is the Nasi of the Shekarim, and this is a very big sheker, because the Yetzer Hara is withholding one piece of information from you. He can't withhold a piece of information about all the averis that you do, and he can't withhold a piece of information about all the enjoyment and pleasure that you get from these averis, but the Yetzer Hara is withholding one X factor from you, and that makes all the difference. And it's something that we have to impart within our children, this X factor, because without it, a teenager is sitting there in a no man's land between adulthood and childhood, in a lost, lonely place, is prey for the Yetzer Hara that so warmly stops and taps him on the shoulder to offer directions. If you don't, adults themselves have to know this. But your children that are standing at the nexus of their lives, it's imperative of utmost necessity that we explain this to them. And that is as follows. When Hashem created you, He created you with your hands and your eyes, 2 feet, a mouth, a nose, and a Yetzer Hara. The difference between all those body parts and your Yetzer Hara is that a human being can live without some body parts, but he can't live without a Yetzer Hara. That's part of being a human being. A mason chofshi, dead people don't have a Yetzer Hara. Live people have a Yetzer Hara. And Hashem injects, so to speak, this Yetzer Hara within you, and it's designed specifically to make you enjoy averis that you do, and to tempt you to do those averis. And it has nothing to do with the Rambam's statements that you could be a tzaddik as great as Moshe Rabbeinu. And this is a very big mistake that people make, that you think that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have a Yetzer Hara like you. And we know the truth is the opposite. You know the story with the Vilna Gaon, where somebody goes to the Vilna Gaon and he says, Vilna Gaon, a Talmud, if I had your small Yetzer Hara, I'd be a Vilna Gaon like you. Now he was forgetting the Gemara that says, "Kol ha'gadol machaveiro yitzrei gadol mimenu." Whoever is greater than his friend has a greater Yetzer Hara. And so the Vilna Gaon answers, "Ha! If you would have my Yetzer Hara, you wouldn't even be a Shomer Shabbos." And when we say you have the potential to be a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu, it means, despite the fact that you enjoy doing those averis, and that you feel more comfortable doing an avera than you do doing a mitzvah. Doing a mitzvah may be hard for you, and doing an avera may be easy for you. And every time you overcome the temptation to do an avera, it's a battle. But that's exactly the type of person that has the potential to be a greater tzaddik as Moshe Rabbeinu. And I'll tell you, the best place that I've seen this explained in any sefer is, I have it right here, and this particular piece should be required reading for every teenager and adult, but you should see it starting from when you're a teenager or even less, for every Orthodox Jew on the face of this planet. Sefer Pachad Yitzchak from Rav Yitzchak Kuttner. It's a letter in the Igros Uksav in Simon Kufchof Ches. There he writes a letter to a student who had a disillusioned student, a disappointed student, somebody who once upon a time aspired to be an Otam Gadol, and now he sees his aspirations dashed to the floor, broken, and he looks to the future and he sees that he's no longer really cut out to be that Gadol that he once upon a time wanted to be. And he writes to the Rosh Hashiva, "Chaval, how sad I am. I once wanted to be an Otam Gadol and now I can't be, because I see all the aveirs that I do and I feel the Yetzer Hara all the time." And Rav Huttner writes back, and I don't have time to go over the entire letter, Rabbeisai, in this little letter he explains it more than I can do in 20 shiurim. It's one of the most beautiful pieces of Torah that I've ever seen in my life anywhere. It's Mamish Moirid Demois if you read it. It makes you cry. And he writes to this Simon Kufchov Ches in Pachad Yitzchak, Igrei Suksofen. He starts off by saying that we have an evil sickness among us, or a bad sickness. Ra'a choyle, he explained. It's a sickness. But when we talk about our Gedolim, we only talk about their Sach HaKol, their bottom line of their greatness. He says we speak about the Chafetz Chaim, and we're all impressed, and we even believe it's the next thing to a miracle, how the Chafetz Chaim never spoke Lashon Hara, the purity of speech of that Chafetz Chaim. But he says nobody ever talks about all the downfalls the Chafetz Chaim had, and all the failures the Chafetz Chaim had in his battle against the Yetzer Hara not to speak Lashon Hara, and all the retreats that he made in that battle against the Yetzer Hara not to speak Lashon Hara. And the Chafetz Chaim did yet speak Lashon Hara, he says there's no question about it, because he was not born the Chafetz Chaim. He was a regular human being who had the potential to be as great a tzaddik as Moshe Rabbeinu, and ended up as great a tzaddik as the Chafetz Chaim. And if everybody has the greatest potential to be as great a tzaddik as Moshe Rabbeinu, we can assume that we also have the potential to be as great a tzaddik as the Chafetz Chaim, no matter who we are. And it's terrible that we teach our children that a gadol is only somebody that sits like dead people, he says in Olam Haba, Batoiseim v'roshayim u'nehenemiz of Hashchina, that is sitting there basking in the glory of the Eitz HaToiv and are not engulfed and embraced by the storm of the Eitz HaHara. He says it's a sheker and it's a sickness. And the result of this sickness, he calls it a machla. The result of the sickness is that when a bachur in yeshiva or a girl in Beis Yankov feels the Eitz HaHara and they know what they really like, and they know what they really consider difficult for them, they look at themselves and they feel that, well, this determines their potential, what they are cut out to be. Toiv, it says in the Medrash, Ma'oid ze yetzahara. He says, my friend, don't tell anybody I told you this, he says. He says, I push you on against my chest and I'm whispering in your ear that if your letter would have written to me about all the mitzvahs that you did, I would have said that I got from you a letter that's toiv. Now that your letter tells me about all the averus and downfalls and failures that you had in Yiddishkeit, I say to you that I received a letter that's toiv ma'oid. Because as long as you are fighting the Yetzer Hara, even if you lose, he says, you're closer to the Gedolim then than when you're sitting comfortably with your Yetzer Tov. Sheva Yifal Tzadik Vakam. The Tzadik falls seven times and then he gets up. It doesn't mean, he says, despite the seven failures, the Tzadik gets up nevertheless. It means because of the seven failures. That's the approach to the rising of the Tzadik later on. If you feel the Yetzer Hara in you, and you lose, you fight and you lose, that's godless. That's the potential for greatness. He says, imagine, he says to us, you should visualize for yourselves the greatness of our Gedolim, not in terms of people that just sit and are able to do mitzvah so easily. We should visualize greatness of Gedolim in terms of an awesome battle against their low and dark netiyas, their low and dark temptations. That's what a Gadol is. A Gadol is a fighter. And if you feel that HaKadosh Baruch Hu put you in the ring with a very powerful opponent, and you get up there and you fight, that's godless, that's greatness. And it's so important, because every single child in this world who determines their future, and we live in a funny world, because the 30-year-olds and the 40-year-olds and the 50-year-olds, their careers and their life are determined by 15 and 16 year olds. They themselves, when they were younger, we decide what we're going to be when we grow up and what path we're going to take when we're teenagers. And then we shoot for it. And more often than not, we take a look at ourselves and we say, how great are we cut out to be? And it's such a sheker. Because we're cut out to be as great as we want to be. And yes, it may be that you're a Rasha today. A Rasha today. Could be. It may be that you feel that every time you do a mitzvah, it's so hard because you feel that Yetzer Hara pulling against you. And all this may be true. But it doesn't take away from the fact that if you fight, we all have the potential to be great. We have kids nowadays that think they're not even cut out to be frum. They sneak out to some movie, or they sneak out to some place where they're not supposed to be. They meet friends and they like it. They enjoy it. And they feel comfortable. They don't feel as comfortable in the yeshiva, where everybody's looking at them. Do you know the Tosfos? Do you not know the Tosfos? There's somewhat competition. People are always judging them, and people are always determining who's good and who's bad. Here it's comfortable in the pizza store. Nobody bothers you. You can make a joke. You can be yourself. And that's the mistake, when they say you can be yourself. Because you're confusing yourself for your Yetzirah. The Yetzirah is not part of you. The Yetzirah is like a drug. It's a game, kaviyochel, that Hashem plays. When we come into this world, He injects us with a little drug that's called the Yetzirah, that makes us do aveiros. And we're supposed to fight that fix. We're supposed to fight that drug, that Yetzirah, and win the battle. We're not always going to win. We're very often going to lose. But the potential is always to win. If you want to see how great a potential every human being has, all you have to do is pay attention to the most basic halacha in the Torah. There's a halacha that's called Yehoreg V'al Yavor. There are three averis in the Torah that you have to allow yourself to be killed rather than commit them. Gilei Arayos, because of Avodah Zarah. Now for Gilei Arayos and Avodah Zarah, the Gemara learns out from a certain place that it's Yehoreg V'al Yavor. But Shvichas Damim is an amazing thing. That murder is Yehoreg V'al Yavor. There's no pasuk anywhere in Kol HaTorah Kula that tells us such a thing. There's no halacha l'moshe misinai. There's no drasha. There's no extra word. No extra letter. No kal v'chomer. No midas shatar nidareshes b'hem. Nothing. And yet, the Gemara says that murder is an exception to the basic rule of achai b'hem because of a simple svara. My fault is the Domcha Somik Tfei. How do you know that your life is worth more to Hashem than the next guy's life? And if somebody asks you to kill somebody or be killed, you have to Sheval Taisa. You're not allowed to do anything because you can't take action on that doubt and let nature take its course, whatever the person it will do. Now I want you to imagine this. Imagine, let's say, the Chofetz Chaim. Somebody goes over to the Chofetz Chaim. And he tells the Chofetz Chaim, I'm going to kill you unless you kill this person. And this person, Rabbi Yisai, is you, every one of us. Okay? Now the Chofetz Chaim is a tzaddik, he wants to do what's right. But there is no pasuk anywhere in Kol HaTorah Kula that tells the Chofetz Chaim what to do. In Gantz Tanakh, there is no pasuk. There is no drosha, there is no limud. So the Chofetz Chaim has to use simple logic. That's all it's for, is simple logic. He says, well, look, one of us has to die and one of us has to live. Logic dictates that whoever's more valuable to Hashem should live, and whoever's less valuable should die. My chos is the dumb chos somik tfei. How do I know that I'm more valuable to Hashem than this guy? I don't know. So therefore I have to let myself, Chofetz Chaim, die so that you, this guy, should live. Now imagine if that really would have happened. Imagine the tremendous achrayus you would feel that was just dumped in your lap. That the Chofetz Chaim gave up his life because he's not sure that maybe your job in this world, your blood, is more valuable to Hashem than his. And it doesn't matter if it's the Chofetz Chaim or Rabbi Akiva or Moshe Rabbeinu. The halacha applies to us all. My chaz is the dumb chasamik tfei. You don't know who's more valuable. And yes, we know who's on a higher madrega. But of course, if everybody has the potential to be as great a tzaddik as Moshe Rabbeinu, so then we don't know in the bottom line, in the end, who is more valuable ultimately to Hashem. And the only reason why this hasn't happened, why the Chofetz Chaim never gave his life for you, is because nobody made him such an offer, nobody gave him such an ultimatum. So why does that make your responsibility any less? Do you understand what this is, Rabbi Sai? Our life, we look at it, it could be greater and more valuable to Hashem than the greatest Adam Gadol that we've ever imagined. And it's a halacha. It's a halacha in Shulchan Aruch. There's no way out of this. There's no pasuk, nothing, it's simple logic. No gzeres hakazav, it's a pasuk of svar. And it doesn't matter if this kid, who the Chafetz Chaim was ordered to kill, is some 15-year-old Beis Yaakov girl that's fighting with her Yetzer Hara and sneaks out to the movies every Motzei Shabbos, or hangs around with the wrong crowd in the pizza store Erev Shabbos. It doesn't matter. The Chafetz Chaim would have to give up his life so that she could live, for only one reason, because maybe she's more valuable to Hashem than the Chafetz Chaim. Isn't that amazing? It's a double portion. And Hashem is going to mourn every single one of us for not being as great as we could be. And this is Mefurash Gemara. I'm a teacher of Isai, and I've taught boys, I've taught girls in high school level, and I know that as a teacher, we're advised that if you have, let's say, a D student, to try to give him or her more self-confidence and convince them that they could really get a B, or maybe an A-. And if you have a B student, then you convince that you could really get an A. If you have an F- student, to convince him that he could really get Aleph plus is unrealistic. It makes no sense and counterproductive. But by Hashem, it's not that way. The Gemara says that, and some machlokes in different kirsois and different chazals, who it was, but let's say it was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. When he was dying, all the Talmidim came to him and they asked him for a bracha. And he said to the Talmidim, I give you a bracha that you should fear Hashem as much as you fear human beings. Okay? And they said to the Rebbe, is that all? That's all our Yiras Shemayim should be, that great, like we fear human beings and not more? And he said, the Rebbe, halavai, it should be that great. Okay? That's one Gemara. I'll tell you another Gemara. The Gemara says that there are two types of robbers. There's a ganav and a gazlan. A ganav is a burglar that sneaks in the middle of the night, and a gazlan is somebody that robs in broad daylight. The ganav has to pay more fines, more kinosos than the gazlan. And you know what it says in the Gemara? It says because the ganav fears people because he sneaks around, but he doesn't have Yirov HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Gazlan is not afraid of Hashem, but he's not afraid of people. So now what do we have over here? The Ganav pays extra kenosis because what? The Madrega of Yirah Shemayim that he has is less than the Madrega of Yirah for human beings. That's what we hold the Ganav responsible for. Now we know that everybody felt responsible only according to their Madrega, according to what they can accomplish. And I'm not going to be held responsible for something that I can't be expected to attain. And the Ganav is considered responsible because his Yira, his fear of human beings is higher than his Yira Shemayim. But isn't that the Madrega that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai wished upon his Talmidim? The Ganav is held responsible not only because he's a Ganav, because he's a low burglar in the street, but he's held responsible, he said, not only why you a Ganav, they asked him in Shemayim, but why were you not on the Madrega that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai wished for his Talmidim? Not only why you a Ganav, why aren't you such a big tzaddik? Why aren't you Ganav on that Madrega of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai wished and prayed for his Talmidim and said, halavai, they should be on that Madrega? Imagine you have a Ganav. You want to be Makar of the Ganav. He's a professional burglar. He burglarizes people's homes. And you try to be Makar of him. And you tell him, well, you know, it's bad being a burglar. Hashem's going to mourn you in Shemayim. Why are you a burglar? You should try to be an average person. But that's not good enough. Hashem isn't going to mourn him, isn't going to demand from him, why weren't you an average person? Hashem is going to demand from him, why weren't you on such a high Madrega? And simple halacha says that he pays money because he wasn't on that Madrega. He's expected and expects him to be on that Madrega. Every F student can be an Aleph Plus student in Frumkai. And it's something that we have to convince our children of. Because Rabboisai, the decision that your children are going to make of what they want to do with their life is going to be determined more on this than on anything else. They are going to look at themselves and they're going to say, what career, what mold, what Madrega am I cut out to be on? And more often than not, they're going to miss the boat. Now this is true and important regarding every child. Regarding children that are having Yetzer Hara problems, it's a million times more important, because this is what makes them give up. What makes them give up is they take a look at themselves and they see their failures and they say, okay, I'm not cut out to be a normal frum Jew. And they go off. And for us to instill within them the self-worth and the self-value that they have, we have to explain to them this concept, that whatever you did, yeah, it doesn't mean it's right, but whatever you did does not affect your future. And what should be your attitude towards your Avedis, this being the case? And I quote you now from the Satmar Rebbe's Perush on Tehillim, the Tehillos Yoel in Simen Nun Aleph on the Pasuk V'chatosi Negdi Somid. My Avedis are constantly in front of me, like Shivisi Hashem L'Negdi Somid. He brings B'Shem the Talmidei Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh from the Chozim Lublin, that Tomid here doesn't mean consistently, without let up, like Shivisi Hashem L'Negdi Somid. Tomid means once in a blue moon, but forever. Tomid means forever. And he says, like Rashi says, Kol Laila V'Laila Kriya Tomid. Anything that happens from time to time, but if it happens forever, is called Tomid. So that's what it means, Chatasi L'Negdi Somid. You have an Erev Yom Kippur, you have a Yom Kippur, you have an Erev Rosh Chodesh maybe. There are specific times designated for us to think about our Averis. But the rest of the time, the rest of the year, we should not, because it brings to Atzvus. That's what he says. And the Satmar Rebbe is not known for his liberalism. This is what he says. That we shouldn't bother thinking about our Averis. Don't think about it. The Yetzer knocks you down one day, tomorrow is a new day, and you say, Moida Ani, and thank Hashem for a new opportunity, and forget about it. Do tshuva. You're ready to do tshuva, you do tshuva. You're not ready to do tshuva, don't think about them, unless it's one of those times that are designated for thinking about, because it doesn't help you, it can only hurt. This we have to work so hard to teach this to our children. The guilt that they have, even though they're guilty, is misplaced, and it's misused, and it's misapplied, because they apply it, and they place it, and they use it to determine their own potential and their own value to Hashem. And according to the Torah, that such, it's babamaisis, it's not so. Do you know how valuable a human being is to Hashem? There was a maisa with the Satmar Rebbe, where an 8-year-old kid came to him, and there were grapes on a table. They're with the parents, and the Satmar Rebbe tells the 8-year-old kid, make a bracha. The kid makes a bracha. And Satmar Rebbe asks him, do you know what a bracha is? And the kid said, sure. So the Rebbe says, what's a bracha? So he says, we thank Hashem. Kid was smart. He knew what those mafarshim say what baruch means. Okay. The Satmar Rebbe says, okay, fine, let me tell you what a bracha is. He says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is standing there, the Pamalya Shelmala, sitting in his Kisei HaKavod. And around him are all the Malachi Asharis and all the Sarei Mala. And all the Tzadikim of all the generations are sitting there learning Torah and singing Shirais and Tzishbachos to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's what Hashem does the whole day. And all of a sudden, while they're singing and they're learning to Him, suddenly Hashem gives a clap on the table. Shah! There's a little kid saying a bracha, I have to listen. He said, that's what a bracha is. There's a little kid saying a bracha, everybody be quiet, that's more important to me now. I'm certain that that kid, every time he made a bracha, from then on it was different. If we knew how valuable we are to Hashem, if our children knew how valuable they are to Hashem, then it doesn't matter what madrega the person is on. My chos is the damcha somik tfei. We are so valuable to our Kadosh Baruch Hu, we would be different people, and our children would be different people. And I'm not talking just about the asay toiv of giving somebody extra chizuk and extra encouragement. I'm talking this attitude to instill within our children is necessary because of sur meira. It's this attitude more than anything else that causes a kid to give up and to stop fighting, because he mistakenly feels that this is what he's cut out to be. And we all know that because we think this ourselves. But nowadays it's so important, because the Yetzer Hara attacks our children more than ever. And it's so important for them to have this information that they shouldn't let the Yetzer Hara trick them into that. There was a story once about the Netziv of Volozhin, where the Rashiv of Volozhin, he wanted to be a carpenter, and he decided against it. The reason he decided against it, he says, one day, if I become a carpenter, Hashem, after I get up there, after Me'av Yesem Shana, Hashem is going to pull out from under his Kisei HaKavod a copy of the Sefer Eimek HaNetziv that I wrote. And he's going to open up to the title page and it'll say, written by Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin. And Hashem is going to ask me, why didn't you write this? And Hashem Rabbeisai has movies of us over there, these little videos that he's going to play over, of us in a totally different life. And remember, the Rambam says we all have a potential to be as big a tzaddik as Moshe Rabbeinu. Hashem is going to play over movies of us in a different life. More chesed, more Torah, more hasmada, more learning. And Hashem is going to say, why didn't you do all this? Why weren't you this? He's going to show us what could have been. And that's the biggest shud, the biggest waste in the world, the biggest pity, the biggest rachmonis, when something could have been, and it isn't. And we have to, our children won't learn this in yeshiva. They're not going to learn this in yeshiva. We have to teach it to them. We have to teach them how valuable they are to our Kaddish Baruch Hu. And we have to teach them no matter who they are or what they did. Whatever they did is only part of growing up and becoming a tzaddik and reaching your potential. Some people have it easier, some people have it harder. But no matter how many times the person fell, he fell 7 times, he's still the tzaddik that gets up later. This is how to instill self-worth in a child. Forget about his response to his mitzvahs. Everybody knows, more or less, how to tell a kid to respond to the mitzvahs that he does with encouragement and with chizuk and with pride. What we don't know is how to teach a child to respond to the averus that he does. And that lack of knowledge in our part is inversely proportionate to the shrewdness and the knowledge that the Yetzer Hara has and the use he makes of this principle. So the first thing for tonight is, and again, a lot of details is beyond the scope of the time that I have here, but the general idea is that we have to instill within our children the idea that they should know how to respond to their failures and their imperfections, their inadequacies. Because without that, the Yetzer Hara comes and they are outgunned. And the way to tell them to respond is, Einecha l'noichach yabitu, look ahead. Whatever you did is terrible, terrible. And you're going to be a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu. And it's something that we have to teach them from when they're little kids. And that's instilling self-worth. That's one. Because there are two rabbisai, two reasons why children don't have self-worth and they give up and they feel they're not cut out to be really nice from B'nai Torah. Reason number one is what I said, they feel that they are inferior. Reason number two is they feel that they're different. I'm not talking inferior or superior. They take a look at the Rosh Hashiva, his personality. I'm not talking about his madrega, his personality. They took a look at B'nai Torah, and they take a look at their personality. And although we know that human beings, Kain, Kishen, Shein, Pirtzai, Fehem, Shovim, Kachain, Deyoseim, Shovim, we all have different personalities, there is a Tzad HaShavah Shebehem of B'nai Torah, because of the way society is, people, very often the Yetzer Hara comes to them and convinces them to throw all B'nai Torah into one type of mold. And if they cannot fit into that mold, because they're different people. They're different. I have to be myself. And we're not talking about doing averus. We're talking about the way a person talks, the way a person likes to feel, a person's interests that he has, his personality, his tachunos. He feels that he has no chance. I was speaking today to a girl in a Beis Yaakov school in Brooklyn, And this is a girl who, well, society convinced her that because she's somewhat talented and she knows how to draw a picture, that her destiny is to buy a loft in Greenwich Village and to sit up there, because she's an artist. She's an artist. What can she do? And she has the artist's soul, and she has the artist's talent, and she has the... And she's just different. I know a father, he's a Rebbe in Yeshiva, who told me he's having problems with his kid because his kid is a good athlete. He loves playing ball. And he loves playing ball, it's just different. He has to be a ball player, as opposed to a Ben Tyre. What the contradiction is, we know there's nothing. But yet, this is what the Yetzer Hara is convincing people of. And part of this is our fault. Because we tend to try to fit everybody into one particular mold. And if somebody's somewhat different, we look at them askance. The truth is that every human being in this world has a job to do and his own particular potential to reach. And if he doesn't reach his own potential the way Hashem wanted him to, with his own individual koichus, whatever job he's destined to do won't be done. And I'll tell you, Ankenis, this is what happened with Rus. It's a very strange thing. We just read Megillus Rus, and we see the story of Malchus Beis David was created in ways that are nothing but Nisim. But everybody asks the question, why a Moyovi? And why did it have to be in such a way, a Maisa with where she went to Boyaz and on the floor of the by the threshing floor? A Maisa that it says in the Mephoshim, that in the Chazal, that Boyaz, because of this thing that seems to him to be a Pritzus, he needed HaKadosh Baruch Hu's supernatural koyach not to throw her out right away when he found her there. Yes, of course it was a mitzvah what she did in not an Aveira, we know they weren't Goyzer Yichud yet on a Penuyah, but why from all the ways Malchus Beis David could have been created did it have to be from here? Teretz is Poshut. Because we know that the Malchus had it created through Chesed. Right? That's what it says in all the Mephoshim. In the spheres, first comes Chesed, and the last one is Malchus. Hashem created the world through Chesed, Olam Chesed Yibaneh, and the world ends, it culminates in Malchus Melech HaMashiach. Malchus needed Chesed. But Chesed has two sides. There's the Yetzer Tov of Chesed, and the Yetzer Hara of Chesed. You should serve Hashem with your Yetzer Hara too. And the Yetzer Hara of Chesed, what does it say in all the Svarim, in the Pasuk by the Parsha of Arayas, it says Chesed who? Say the Mephoshim, because Arayas is a perversion. It's a twisted version of Chesed. But you know what? If they needed Chesed to create Malchus, they needed both sides of Chesed to use to serve Hashem, the lave of the Yetzer Tov and the lave of the Yetzer Hara. And somebody, there had to be somebody in the world that was capable of using the Yetzer Hara of Chesed for Avodas Hashem. The typical Beis Yaakov girl could never have done it. If Boyaz needed a nest, a Siyata Dishmaya, not to throw her out, then we understand that she was different than the average from a Yid, that she was able to do it. And we know that Rus was struggling with this Yetzer Hara in her, because it says when Rus reported back to Naomi and she said that Boyaz told me to stay away from the Na'arim, from the Na'arois, excuse me, she said Na'arois and not Na'arim, and the Mephoshim say that just the opposite, and he told her to glean with the Na'arois. She reported that Boyaz told her to glean with the Na'arim. And it says in the Mepharshim that that's why at that pasuk she's called Rus HaMoyaviyah, because she was still struggling with that Yetzer Hara, that Moyav was Shtufei Zima. Moyav means Me'av, it was an arm that was created from an act of Gilei Arayos. If Rus would have been a typical Beis Yaakov girl in those days, she never would have been able to do what she did with Boyaz. Because Boaz wasn't able to be soivel it. He needed a nest to be able to tolerate it. She didn't need a nest. She was able to do that mitzvah that nobody else could do. Hashem needed a complete version of chesed to create Malchus. And he searched all over the world and he found this woman in Moav who had the potential to do it. And he manipulated circumstances so that this girl in Moav can come and do her job, not the job of all the other tzaddikuses in the world, whose job it was to stay away from such acts like she did with Boaz, and they did their job well. Hashem needed somebody who had the tachuna, who had the potential, that particular personality, where she was able to do this act of avodas Hashem that nobody else was able to do, that act of chesed. And that's what it means when Boaz told her, Heitav chasdecha achrayim min harishay, your second act of chesed is more toiv than the first. Because the first act of chesed that she did with Naomi, with her husband, was chesed of the Yetzer Tov. And Vayara Hashem es kol asher osa v'hine toiv ma'oid. Toiv zeh Yetzer Tov, ma'oid zeh Yetzer Hara. Her second act of chesed was chesed that she did with the Yetzer Hara. Hey, taf chasdecha achrayim min harishayim. Your second act was more toiv. Because that was the Yetzer Hara's chesed. And that's toiv ma'oid. It's more toiv than the chesed that you did with the Yetzer Tov. Rabbi Akiva. We find all over Shas that Rabbi Akiva used to have different thoughts than all of his peers. They were surveying the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, and everybody was crying because of the Chorban. Rabbi Akiva laughed. He says, well, if Hashem's promise to... Rabbi Akiva came and gave him the idea that nobody could think of. It wasn't the regular Chiddush that we know Hashem got from Sinai, and Rabbi Akiva just re-established it. This, it says, Ad Shabbat Rabbi Akiva, nobody knew this. Rabbi Akiva thought differently than everybody else, and I am convinced, Rabbi Sai, that if Rabbi Akiva would be growing up today, in our society, and a Rebbe in the yeshiva would see that while all the students cried when he discusses the Churban, one student laughed. Because he says, oh, if Hashem's promise of destruction came true, kal v'chomer this. Or if they were visiting the Rebbe of Bikur Cholim and the student said, Chavivim Yisurim, and everybody was thinking in one direction and one student was thinking in the other, believe me, Rabbi Akiva would be sent to the guidance counselor for therapy. Rabbi Akiva would never be allowed to flourish in our society today. Because we have an idea that everybody has to think the same, everybody has to be the same, and there's no room for somebody that thinks a little differently. And our children really believe that. When they look at a gadol, what do they look at? They look at not only his Torah and his mitzvahs. They take a look at his personality, and of course, the personality of a gadol is kadosh, and sifas chulin of a gadol needs learning. But the point is that there are certain personality traits of people that cannot be changed. We know the kohanim. Right? They were hot-headed people. And they used this. The Leviim, the Kohanim, they used this for the Kanoyas. This was Pinchas. This was Moshe Rabbeinu. They used this for Avodas Hashem. And don't the Balei Musar say that there's no such thing as a bad midah, but everything could be channeled to Avodas Hashem. And even a lust for blood comes in handy if you want to be a Shoichet. And it says in Chazal that if you have this lust for revenge, you should be a Dayan. And the Gemara at the beginning of Pesachim says that different people they found with different personality traits, one loved the water, and they found out he was from Shevet Zvulun, and etc. and etc. We all have different personality traits, and if this Gadol, who's cut out to be from Shevet Zvulun because he loves the water, is going to try to be a Shevet Yisachar, it's not going to work. And of course he's not going to feel like he fits. But we have 12 Shvatim with 12 different tunas, 12 different personalities. And we need those people that are going to be the more edler people. We need the more kanoyazdika people. We need the more passive people. Because these are tunas that you cannot change. There are good midas and bad midas, but there's something called a tuna that a person naturally has. And you have to channel that to avoid this Hashem, like Rus channeled it to avoid this Hashem. In Tanakh, there's a story of a king called Yehu ben Nimshi. This Yehu ben Nimshi, He was the one that finally eliminated the Baal cult from Klal Yisrael. It was Oivdei Avodah Zarah for hundreds and hundreds of years. Not Shlomo HaMelech could get rid of them, not Dovid HaMelech could get rid of them, nobody could get rid of them. Yehu was able to do it. Now you know what the Tanakh says about Yehu? It's in Sefer Melachim Beis. It says about Yehu, it says he's Meshuggah. It says that they knew after he found out from the Navi that he was supposed to be a king, so he ran to kill the present kings. And he took his army and he just ran. And it says over there that the scouts saw the battalion coming towards him, and it says, I don't know, I can't see who it is, but they're driving crazy, so it must be Yehu. That's what it says. That's how they knew it must be Yehu. And he did things that regular kings didn't do. He was the one that finally killed that evil Mashas Izebel. What did he do to her? She was standing there out the window, and she says in the psukim, she put on her makeup, and she was a queen, and she just wanted to be treated like a queen, to put in the royal golden handcuffs and put on trial and queen. And Yehu's standing down there, and the people ask, what do we do with her? He says, throw it out the window. That's his lashon. A zohar, not in a cave, it says in the Mefarshim. Throw it out the window. Threw him out the window and goodbye. And then he destroyed the whole Baal cult. He got up by the shtemda and he said, everybody should know, me, Yehu, I'm a Baal worshipper. And I'm making a party for Baal worshippers. And any Baal worshipper that's not there is going to be killed. And he gave them special clothes to make sure that only Baal worshippers would go there. And he put them all in the temple of Baal, and for the special party that Yehu was throwing, and then he called in his men with the swords. And it said that the blood ran from gate to gate from the entire city. It's so out of character for all other Malchei Yisrael and Malchei Yehuda. But you know what? Yehu, that was his job. All the other Malachim, and Eliyahu HaNavi, and Elisha HaNavi, all the other king's men, and all the other king's horses, and the Nevi'im could not do this because that was not their job, Minah Shamayim. They did not have that personality, Tchuna. Only Yehu did. And Yehu was able to do it. And Yehu had his job. No matter what personality a kid has, it's something that we don't do anymore. We have lost the ability to assess each kid's potential, not in terms of quantity, how high he can reach, but in quality, in terms of which heights can he reach? What is this kid's job in the world? And this is why our children, many of them, look at themselves as different, and because they look at themselves as different, they look at themselves as they have no place on the Mizrachvan, on the dais of Tzadikim of Klal Yisrael. And that's such a pity, because not only are they going to lose their place that they could have had among the Tzadikim, but we're going to lose the benefit of whatever they were supposed to do for us. You know, there's so many problems in Klal Yisrael. So many problems. Hashem should help us. Hashem Yazreinu. And there's so many people that are willing to help and do something for Klal Yisrael. So many tzaddikim that are willing to give their lives to be Isaac, B'tzorchei Tzibur, and do things. But for some reason, we all seem to be really good at doing almost the same things. And we need 100,000 Rosh Hashivas to teach above Metziah and Yevomis and Ksuvis. Sachas v'shalom, I'm not saying. We need all of them. But what I am saying is that I'm convinced, and I can't bring you a raya from a Gemara, but I'm really convinced, and Dvam HaYotzim and Halev, that if we would really bring up our children to do what they were destined to do, a lot of these problems that nobody can handle would be handled. Because we would have different types of people who are designed for these particular problems, but we don't have it. So what is it? It's not within our power to change Klal Yisrael, and it's not within our within the toichen of the shir to recommend that. But if we have a child, or if we know of a child who perceives themselves different than everybody else, maybe they have some strange Yetzer Hara or some strange personality trait, And I'm sure we can all think of people like that. Whatever strange, unusual personality trait they have, that thing somehow, some way could be channeled to Avodas Hashem. Because Rabbi Saif, Rus Hamoy Avia, could channel her internal tzechuna to Avodas Hashem, and out of her comes Melech HaMashiach. Whatever we're thinking of with our unusual friend is not more off-center. Every single person in with his personality could be a tzaddik as big as Moshe Rabbeinu, but it means with his personality. So this is the second thing in instilling self-esteem in every kid. You have to teach your child that not that he could be like somebody else, or he could be one of the group. He can be great. Not only can he be great, but he can be great because he is him. You have to point out to your child, look. Look what you are. Look at this. You're different than him. You excel in this. You have this personality trait. You're bothered very, very much when somebody does something wrong. So you could take this path of Avodas Hashem. Or you could be soivel what's going on around you. So you can take that path of Avodas Hashem. You have to tune into your children's personalities and then point out their particular individual peculiar characteristics and tell them and show them how they can become great. The first was Ein B'Klal Masha B'Prat, and the second is Ein B'Prat Al Masha B'Klal. Everybody, no matter what, can be a tzaddik as big as Moshe Rabbeinu. But two, if you want to convince your child of that, the best chance you have is to convince them that they, in their own particular personality, because they are them, not despite the fact that they are them, have the potential. I once said a mushal, and then I'm going to take questions. I once said a mushal, there are two ways, two approaches to chinuch. There's the approach of the barber and the approach of the chef. I wrote an article about it once, I see by some faces that you read it. A barber and a chef both try to put out a quality product, but they do it two opposite ways. The barber, if he has a client and the hair is uneven, the only way he has to even it out is to snip off a little from the other side. And if he snips too much from this side, he has to snip off from the other side. And he keeps snipping and snipping and snipping and snipping and amputating and chopping off until things are nice and even. The chef, when he makes a gourmet dish, he also has to have right proportion and a balance. But he does different. If he sees that there's too much of one ingredient, he adds more of another, and more of another, and more of another, and he never takes anything out. He keeps adding until there's the right balance. It's the same thing with chinuch. There are those that see an imbalance in their charges, a talmud, a child, and immediately they start amputating this part of their personality, that part, get rid of this part of your personality, do away with that, work away this, work away that. And there are those that add to a child's personality, so that his natural approach to life, chanoich l'nar al pi darkoi, his natural approach to life can be utilized by him. Barasi yetzahoi, barasi tera tavlin. Says the Mefarshim, what's tavlin? Tavlin means a spice. It's not a cure. It doesn't eliminate the yetzahara. The yetzahara is unpalatable. It's useless. But the Torah gives it the spices and changes it and makes it palatable, makes it good. And everybody has their own individual yetzaharas. And we have to make sure not to amputate our children, because there are so many children walking around with amputated personalities. And with as much individuality and creativity and originality as stack of paper cups. And that's not the way Hashem meant it to be. Because everybody in this world has a job. And sometimes it's hard to figure out what our job is. But one thing's for certain. All our jobs are different. And that we have to impart in our children. So, in short, we discussed tonight the basic. We started discussing how to teach your child that he can be great one day. The first thing is, not only do what we all know we have to do, namely to encourage him when he does something good, but we have to teach him how to respond and how to look at himself when he does something bad. Because that's more important. The Sur Meira is more important than the Asay Tov. We have to protect him from the disillusionment that's going to come when he sees his own downfalls. B, we have to encourage him to see that not only he could be great because he's one of a klal, he could be great because he is him. And nobody in the world can do the job that he can do in this world. You have to take your child's peculiar personality and build it up in his own mind and make him see that that is going to make him great and nothing else. And now, if anybody has any questions about what we spoke about here or anything in the topic of bringing up teenagers or chinuch habanim, I'll be glad to answer. Now, usually we take questions from the ladies, and what we do is we let them write on a piece of paper and pass it up. But now, unless the ladies know how to make paper planes, that's not going to be an easy thing. You go up and get it. Anybody? Yeah, okay. So not everything is so easy to figure out what to do with Avodas Hashem. But if a bach is athletic, he's very strong, he's a gesunde guy. He can use that gesundkeit. So what? When everybody else, Bein Hastorim, is horizontalizing themselves in the yeshiva in the dormitory because they pashut have no kindness for anything, this guy's blood is still circulating. And you tell the kid, you're healthy, you're a gesunde guy. You can sit in the basketball court for a half hour straight. Your resting pulse rate is 55. You don't need that nap in the afternoon like all your friends do. You could be greater than them. Yeah, of course, you know, we're not talking taking rocks off wells like Yaakov Avinu. That's not what I mean. But there's always something. And I don't mean to say that, well, because he has big biceps means he has more potential to be Moshe Rabbeinu than anybody else. But there's always something in a kid's personality that could make him do. You should tell this kid about the Satmar Rav that didn't sleep at night at all since he was 20 years old until he had a stroke when he was in his late 80s. And you tell him that that's a level of Hasmoda that we cannot don't see anymore. And then you point to this, I forgot his name, that Baal Tshuva in Eretz Yisrael, he used to be the big karate guy, then he became Baal Tshuva and he sits learning Yom HaLaila because he's a big gezunta guy. You tell him that you can do things that your friends can't do. There's always something. And everything has to be used for Avodas Hashem. That depends on the kid, and that depends. Sometimes, listen, there's a tshuva by Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld. Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld speaks about the playing fitluch on Hanukkah, and the shoyul in the tshuva Silmas Chaim. I know I'm talking to an audience of Bnei Torah here. We know that the shoyul in Silmas Chaim is a big Talmud Chacham himself. And he asked Rabbi Yosef Chaim that he should answer it because of Bittul Torah. And Rabbi Yosef Chaim says, I can't do that. Because not everybody is cut out to learn the whole day. Some people need relaxation. In the Tshuvas Ramah, the Ramah writes that he used to learn Goyi Echokmas Kitzoni, whatever's Mutter, during Shabbos when other people used to go on Tehillim. The Ramah writes that in the Tshuvas Ramah. That's, you know, different people have different needs. And, you know, everybody, some people, we have pictures of Rebar Bear with Rebar, but you know, the forest in the summer. Different people have different ways of revitalizing their own personality. If a kid has this thing to play ball, you know, sometimes it's better. Let him play ball, you know. It depends on the kid. That's an individual thing. That there's no way that I could even venture a guess here. The artist. Do you know that the creativity of the artist, Fakir, is something that we rarely see nowadays? And the sensitivity and the understanding of somebody else, that ability to see things that other people don't see, is very, very important, very useful. And somebody that wants to be Oved Hashem. What? Yeah, I'll tell you what you do. You find somebody that knows, you bring him to Reb Chaim Epstein that knows how to draw better than them. And show him what you don't need to become an artist just because you know how to draw. That's a different story. But if a person has a certain type of tchuna, there's always something in it that Hashem looks to. to try to become Moshe Rabbeinu is a tall order. Doesn't it also say in the Torah that when Chaim Yankel comes to Shemayim, Hashem will not ask you, why weren't you as great as Moshe Rabbeinu? Why weren't you that Chaim Yankel, all that Chaim Yankel could have been? Okay, the author of this question is asking a very good one, but she mixed up the Rambam with the story about the Rebbe Reb Zusha. There's a story about the Rebbe Reb Zusha, where he said, when I come to Shemayim, they won't ask me why I wasn't the Baal Shem Tov. They'll ask me why I wasn't the Rebbe Reb Zusha. And what we mean is as follows. When the Rambam said that everybody could be as great a tzaddik as Moshe Rabbeinu, he didn't mean as great a Navi as Moshe Rabbeinu, because that it says in a pasuk you can't. He didn't necessarily mean as great a Talmud Chacham as Moshe Rabbeinu. He didn't necessarily mean a greater teacher as Moshe Rabbeinu. He meant a tzaddik. A tzaddik meaning that he overcomes his own nisyonis with as much effort as Moshe Rabbeinu put in. So, when you say all that Chaim Yankel could have been, yes, we're not asking you to take Klal Yisrael out of Golus like Moshe Rabbeinu did. But you could be as big a tzaddik as Moshe Rabbeinu without doing the particular things that he did. On the contrary, the whole point is that people could be equal tzaddikim and accomplish different jobs. Moshe Rabbeinu had his kelim, and we have our kelim. But one thing we do have in common is the tzidkis. Tzidkis is not accomplishment. Tzidkis is the doing. Is it possible that some children may have developed a certain degree of depression, possibly due to stress of the family? Inherent in depressive illness is omnipresent negativism. Okay. Omnipresent negativism. Shouldn't this factor be examined before labeling someone a behavior problem? I must preface this that I don't have a degree in psychology, and I know that Hashem is omnipresent, and I'm not really 100% certain of what the question means, but I can tell you this, that in terms of stresses of family, according to my computer, and I have files on every child that I deal with, and I ask the computer for a common denominator between them, the most common denominator between all the kids that have problems with frumkeit or social problems is stress in the family. Usually, more often than not, shalom bayis problems among the parents. Parents have shalom bayis problems. My statistics, I don't have 10,000 people, but from the 250 that I have on my computer, all around this area, statistics say that the most common denominator is stress in the home. Kids don't get along with the parents. Parents don't get along with each other. Most people think that it has to do with stress in the school, and that may be a very big factor. Because sixth grade, for some reason, is the most common starting point where symptoms show, according to what I have. Why sixth grade? So the people in Torah Masorah tell me that sixth grade starts the departmentalization of the schools, and that's more pressure. Whatever it is, that may be. But there's no question that a comfortable home life, definitely no question about it, is of utmost importance for a kid's development. That's Rashi in Chumash, by the way. Rashi says, why is the Pasha of Ben Soru Moira next to the Pasha of Yifas Toyar? Because the person who marries Yifas Toyar, he'll come to hate her, and then he'll come to have a Ben Soru Moira. So it's mashma, Pasha to Pshat, that one, it goes in steps. First he comes to hate her because he married her, and because he hates her, he'll have a Ben Soru Moira. So it's clear that a Ben Soru Moira, rebellious kid, comes because a guy doesn't get along with his wife. But even without, that's Rashi. The Yehuda Va'od Lekro is that we see it B'chush like that also. I find it easier to accept my children's unique qualities when not in the context of others, particularly in the yeshiva context. No matter how we build up and reinforce these children, the yeshivas relentlessly push these kids away and make them feel like bums. Whoever wrote this, please see me privately, because this complaint comes from a lot of parents, and a lot of children do end up feeling that way. But there are those that beat the system, and there is a way to do it. It depends on your particular child, and if you see me privately, I promise you I'll talk to you. If a child cringes every time they hear words like Ben Melech, how do you approach using words like Avodas Hashem, Gan Melech, or Ben Melech? I'm sorry, I don't understand it. After the shir, if you see me personally, I'll gladly help you.
What does one do when a child is so negative that he brings down everyone in his family? How does one handle this? I'll tell you how you handle this. And I don't know your particular situation, so I can't give you a particular answer. But in general, this is something that is very, very common. And that is this. Children act the way we treat them. We think that we treat them based upon the way they act, but it's not so. They act based upon the way we treat them. In other words, the chitzonius is mashpia on the panemius. If you treat a child like a responsible child, they're going to act responsible. If you trust them, they're going to be trustworthy. Now please, don't hold me responsible for all the things they break in your house because you held that they were trustworthy. It doesn't always work. But the quickest... There's no guarantees of anything. But the quickest way that I know of to get a child to be trustworthy is to trust them. I was in a yeshiva, I don't want to mention the name. I went to this yeshiva, and the first day I walk in, there's a sign on the wall lobby. Whoever broke the glass in the candy machine and stole the candies is a big chil Hashem, please bring back the money and the candies. And the candy machine had this big masking tape over where the glass is supposed to be. Then later I went to Lakewood. And in Lakewood, they also sell candies. But they do it a different way. They have a, I don't know what they do now, this was then, they have a locker in the dining room that's locked with a lock, a combination lock, and the combination is posted in Hebrew on the outside. So only the yeshiva people can understand it. You open it up and there's all these candies in a box. In the box you put the money and you take out your candies. And everybody's free to do it. Now, although there's no question in my mind that the owner of this enterprise makes more money in Elul than he does the rest of the year, nevertheless, the difference is that you feel like a mensch. If you're trusted, then you end up earning that trust. It's backwards. It's not fair to ask parents to treat kids as if they already earned something. But that's really the best way. If you treat a kid like a grown-up, he's going to act like a grown-up. I once told a parent... It was a lady. It was she came and she said that her son keeps coming to her and says, "I hate you, I hate you, I hate you. And what do I do?" So I told her like this. Now, again, I don't know what traditional psychoanalytic methods would tell her, but I just told her what I know. I said, "This is what you do." I said, "You have to react as if you know for 1,000,000% that he doesn't hate you. And then he'll give up. What do? I said, every time the kid comes over to you and says, I hate you, mommy, take out $10 from your pocket, smile, give it to him, says, no, you don't. And give it to him. Now what's the kid supposed to do? After a few times, it becomes a joke. Kid says, I hate you, mommy. Oh, you need money again. Here. It loses its whole effect. There's nothing left. And you know what? I was surprised myself. It worked. So for 3 weeks, the kid didn't do that. Because it becomes a joke. And whatever feelings he has inside, it dissipates. If you want your child not to be negative, you treat him as if he's already positive. And don't let his negativity spread to everybody else. Treat him as if he's the most positive. Nonchalant, as if everything's fine. And usually... Again, I can't give any guarantees. I don't know your particular situation. But usually, more often than any other Eitzah that I know of, this is a generality works. If someone has a natural tendency towards depression, how could this be channeled to serve Hashem? Become a Litvak. That was really a joke. But there really is... Now, depression is not normal. That's like saying, what if a person has a natural tendency towards not putting on tefillin in the morning? Depression isn't a tchuna. It's not a personality trait. It's a problem that has to be dealt with. Now, I was only referring to tchunas that are natural personality traits. However, there are people who are more volatile, there are people who are more phlegmatic, there are people who are more naturally happy-go-lucky, and there are people who are more serious. And we have gedolim that are very, very different than that. There's a story with the Netziv and the Reb Chaim Brisker. I saw it once by the Beis Halevi. In the Brisker Haggadah, in the back, it says the story where there was somebody that came to the Netziv. We'll do the other way, sounds better. But somebody came first to the Beis Halevi, and the Beis Halevi was so worried He was in a pachad. He says, what if I didn't be mekayim the mitzvah of matzarites? What if I didn't do the shir of the arba koisis? I hope I did it. I hope I did. He was worried. Like Tosfos says, Godol hametzuvah va'oisa, if you're commanded, it's a greater schar than if you're not commanded, because a person who's commanded always worries if he did it right. And he's always worried. Then he went to the Netziv. And the Tziv was sitting there, oh, Baruch Hashem, I'm so happy. I fulfilled Arba Kaisis, and I fulfilled Matzah, and I did everything. Now, which is better, which is worse, that's not for us to say. But every Gadol used his own personality to fuel himself to Avodas Hashem. If you're worried about whether you did a mitzvah right, Dashriyot Mefachet Tamid. Right? But if du es Hashem b'simcha. So whatever your particular personality trait is, and depression is a strong word, it's also a clinical one, but if a person has a natural tendency towards seriousness, and I mean, I know, I have friends in yeshiva, some of them wouldn't let, and they grew up, Rabban Kotler had a sense of humor, but I can't comprehend it. Rabban Kotler, there were jokes that Rabban Kotler were very funny, and Rabban never laughed at. And there were things that Rabban laughed at, they just weren't funny. In Lakewood, there was once a Purim play. It was Rebbe Yishvei was the head of the Purim play then, where a guy came in with a Rambam, and another guy came in and like threw out the Rambam, and the guy was carrying pots. It was, just didn't make any sense. And Rabban understood that this was the Rambam, and this was the Noisa Kalim, and slugging up there, and he was laughing, Rabban, and nobody else laughed. They thought it was a... They thought it was strange. Rabban had his own... The Satmar Rebbe had such a sense of humor that every average Joe in the street, when he was nifta, there was an Eretz Yisrael magazine, Eretz Yisrael newspaper called Sofer, HaSofer. It's not a magazine for B'nai Torah. And they want to write something about the Satmar Rebbe when he was nifta. What are they going to write about? One thing, that he wouldn't bring this magazine into his house, and he wouldn't allow anybody to bring it into his house. They wrote that he had a wonderful sense of humor, and I still have at home all the jokes, 2 pages, of all of his jokes that he made. Everybody could appreciate, they're different gedolim with different, with different personalities. And whatever personality you have, you could definitely channel it for your Shema and become your type of gadol. I mean, I remember here in Flatbush, we had a Rashiv of Tarvadas or Beli Chazan. And anybody who knew Rebbe Chazan, who's Rabban Kotler, said he was the star of Noshim and Ezekin. A going like that was just not around, was not found. We know Rebbe Chazan's personality was a lot different, let's say, than Rebbe Gedal Yeshua, who was the other Rosh Hashiva of Tarvadas. They were so different. And we have a Rosh Hashiva of Mir, and we have a Rosh Hashiva in Chaim Berlin, and they're all so different. And it's not only in our generation, it was always like that, from the time of the Shvatim. And whatever personality you have, that could be channeled to avoid the Hashem. Anybody else? Okay. Thank you for coming, everybody. There's one more shir to the series, and that's going to be in Reb Yisrael Reisman's shul. No. It's in Rebbe Yisrael Reisman's shul. That's going to be a week from Tuesday, June 14th. That's Gudas Yisrael of Madison, 2221 Ocean Avenue. And the topic over there is how to set an example in your home that your child will be able to relate to. We set examples, but sometimes our kids just don't bond with it. How to let your kid bond with your example that you're trying to set for him. That, B'li Nedah, will be the topic of this year. We're going to be selling tapes for this year. It's $2.
They'll be available.
Okay, the shiurim from the tapes of the last year were sold out by the ladies. There will be available tapes of this year and of the next year also. If you want, what? It's all right, they can read it. Thank you very, very much for coming, you wonderful audience. Gute Nacht.